This is a Sandy Boy Productions podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I'm your host, Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today, my guest is CJ Albertson, who just placed seventh at the Boston Marathon with a PR in a time of 2:09:53. Just back in February, he finished fifth at the Olympic Marathon Trials in 2:10:07, which was also a PR. CJ is a coach. He is the dad of two. He runs for Brooks. He has a somewhat untraditional way of training and running marathons, which I ask him about in the episode. He doesn't think it's that untraditional, though. I think maybe he thinks the rest of us are overthinking marathons. I don't know. But it was so fun to catch up with CJ. If you want to hear more from him, he was first on this podcast back in 2021 after he ran the Boston Marathon and placed 10th. And that was the year that he led the race for much of the race. This was his fourth Boston, and you're going to hear all about it. And a little bit about the Olympic trials as well in this episode. Hey, so I've got some events coming up that I want to make sure you all know about in case you are in any of these locations. Thursday, May 2nd, I will be in Chicago at Fleet Feet with Alicia Montano and Ultra. We are going to have a demo run, an Ultra demo run at 6 p.m. And then at 7 p.m., we're going to have a live podcast recording with myself and Alicia. And then the next day, I will be at the One America 500 Festival Mini Marathon Expo. I'm going to be speaking at 3 p.m. at that expo. This was my first ever half marathon, a race that is near and dear to my heart. You know, I'm from Indianapolis and I love that city. I first ran this race in 2005. If this is not on your list of half marathons to run, definitely get it on your agenda because it is so much fun. You get to run on the Indy 500 Motor Speedway, which is just so, so fun. It's a flat, fast course, and it is super well organized. It's really cool. You start and finish downtown Indianapolis. And then lastly, if you are running the Bay Shore Marathon, I will be in beautiful Traverse City, Michigan for the 42nd annual Bay Shore, which is a half marathon, a marathon, and a 10K. Along the shores of Grand Traverse Bay. So I'll be announcing at the start and finish, and we'll also be hosting a live podcast recording with the one and only Des Linden at the historic Traverse City Opera House on Thursday night, May 23rd. Registration for both can be found at bayshoremarathon.org. And listen to this. Make sure you get registered to the show with Des and I because we will pull one name from everybody registered for the live show by May 10th, and you will have an exclusive dinner with myself and Des prior to the show. Listen, I know you want to be at that dinner with Des, so definitely get registered before May 10th. We'll also be hosting the Bayshore Shakeout Run on Friday morning, and Des will be helping me send everyone off race morning in Bayshore. All right, please enjoy my conversation with CJ Albertson. Today on the podcast, we have CJ Albertson, fresh off a stellar performance in Boston. Congratulations, CJ.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good. You know, you always have like the couple days post-marathon where you just kind of feel tired and just from like the lack of sleep, the race, the travel, all of that. But yeah, I feel decent right now.
Are you like going to wait a few months before you run another marathon?
Yeah, I don't have anything scheduled right now. No upcoming races anytime soon. So yeah, I mean, I never know when I'm going to randomly hop in one, but I don't think there'll be another one soon.
I feel like that's the CJ Albertson way though. Like that is how you're so untraditional in the way you do this. So many pros run like two marathons a year and that's that. How does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fairly similar in a sense that I'll have maybe, you know, two big marathons a year or like I guess like two seasons where like I'm like really in shape, but just, you know, within that time frame I may run more marathons, or maybe I'll do a couple back to back, or like a couple within like a couple, like a month or so. But like, that's still kind of like all the same, I guess, build up or same fitness. You know, it's like if you're like people in track, like when they're racing, like, you know, training for the 5K or whatever, it's like they may have like two seasons, like your cross country season and then your track season, but you have like multiple races within that. But it's like still just two kind of seasons where like you take time in between them, you know, you have mental breaks and things like that. So I feel like it's a little bit more similar than it maybe initially seems, where it's like I still have like those kind of maybe, you know, maybe two times of the year where I'm like in shape, really like dedicated to training. But I may just have like a little bit more marathon races thrown in there than other people do. And then sometimes I just run randomly.
But this year's different too, because like obviously your like pinnacle moment was to be the trials. And then after that you decided, well, let's do it again this spring at Boston, which other people did too.
Yeah. The Olympic trials is obviously different, because normally there's not really like a big marathon in into January, early February. So like you typically, Boston is like what you kind of open up with for the year. So yeah, this was different, but like I love Boston. It's just like such a fun race. The whole weekend's just fun, like fun atmosphere, everything. So I wanted to do it again. And obviously like the Olympic trials was the focus, and wanted to be ready for that. And, you know, hopefully I'm my best for that. And then, you know, Boston is like, you want to be at your best for every race. But it was like, even, you know, if I'm only going to be 90%, it's like, well, Boston's like worth doing. And I think the more that you run, like the more races that you've done, you don't necessarily have to feel like you're at like 100% to race. Like you can race at 90%. You can always race at 90%, but particularly like when you've done lots of races and have done a lot of things, like you can race at 90% and even do really well. So I feel like sometimes people take the marathon a little too seriously. Like they have to have this like perfect 14 week or 16 week buildup before they run each one. And it's like, maybe for your first one, like your first couple, yeah, you want to have really good blocks. Maybe they need to be a little bit longer and really invested in, because it's something you've never done before, or it's really, you know, really hard. But then after that, like if you've run like 10 to 15, it's like your body knows what to do. Like you don't, and it takes shorter to get back to where you were before. So, you know, and you don't have to have those perfect blocks. You know, you can just go out and run, and, you know, you may end up having a PR.
Well, and like the most boring follow-up to that is like, obviously shoes are better now, so you can recover better. Do you find that?
My first marathon I ran was just in like traditional flats. And then I ran another marathon 2 weeks later. So I feel like I've always been like, you know, it's never really, I've always just kind of like done it that way and felt like I could recover. But yeah, I mean, the shoes, I think for everyone, you know, and for the general population too, like it is a little bit easier to recover. You don't get beat up as much, or you can maybe train a little bit more so that you don't get beat up as much after a marathon. Cause that's one big thing people always ask me, like, oh, how do you like recover? Like, and it's like, it's not necessarily that I recover faster. It's just that like I don't get beat up as much, because that's like training. Like, yeah. I've been running since I was 10. I've been doing long runs, you know, since, you know, even in my senior year of high school, like I got up to doing like 16 miles, you know, at around like 6 minute pace. So relative to my speed back then, like that was a pretty quick pace. Even in college, like after my freshman year of cross country season, I went out and just ran a marathon, like, around Phoenix, just for fun. My last 2 years of college, after the season ended, I ran a 30 miler and then a 32 miler. And I always just ran like a 6 minute pace. I don't know why. That's just what my pace was for everything. But so I've been doing all of these runs. And then when I started marathon training, doing lots of long runs and obviously mileage. But like when you have a good amount of training for 10 to 15 years and have done so many runs and have done strength training and all that type of stuff, it's like a marathon's still hard. You're still going to get beat up from it. But you've also done it so many times that after a few days, you're relatively okay. So it's not that I have some superhuman like recovery techniques or some super special protocol. I mean, I think maybe there's a little bit of genetics in there, but it's mainly just that like my body's trained to do it. So if you don't want to be sore for 2 weeks, just be really be really prepared for something, and you're still going to be sore, but your recovery time is going to be less.
You are a student of the sport, training, recovery, racing, all of that. What is your newest research that you're paying attention to, or are you doing any new things that you haven't tried before?
Not in particular. I mean, I'm always like kind of following different strength plus like PT type pages just to see how I can strengthen certain things better, maybe run more efficiently, or just, you know, not have little pains, because I'll still have like little pains here and there and various parts of my body, or the athletes that I coach have various pains, and I'm like, I don't know why you're having this pain, but like you're trying to learn and figure it out and learn how the body works and moves and functions better. So, I mean, nothing super in particular. I guess more like lower leg stuff, just kind of how like the feet and ankles move and the muscles that control those and strengthening those through different movements. And I guess all the different movements that the foot and ankle make or are supposed to do. Yeah, just trying to like understand that more and incorporate little things into my training or little exercises or just, you know, making sure everything's working well when I'm running.
All right, everybody, this episode of the podcast is supported by UCAN. We had a great show in Boston with UCAN and Destination Marathons. Got to hear about all the great benefits that UCAN has when you are training for a marathon or a long distance event. It was so good to hear Kira D'Amato talk about how she uses UCAN and implements that in her own training. UCAN is offering listeners of All Have Another a 4-Edge Energy Gel Pack for free. All you have to do is pay shipping. These provide 75 minutes of energy, no sugar or caffeine spikes or crashes. If you have not tried UCAN yet, this is a great way to try out their energy gels. Just go to ucan.co/another to get those 4 free gels. And then if you want to use the code another and use their powder or their bars or anything else on their website that you already know you love or want to try out, just use the code another and that will get you 20% off your entire order. The code is not valid for sample packs. That's ucan.co/another. Go check it out. Okay, let's talk about Boston. Last time you were on the show, it was 2021 and you placed 10th in Boston. I looked back, you ran 2:11. So, you know, it's been 3 years since then and you've made some big steps and you ran a PR 2:09. Was it 52? 53 in Boston. How did it feel to finally break into that sub 2:10 club?
It feels good. I mean, I feel like it's somewhat of like a joke, like not like the, like breaking 2:10 is a joke, but it's just like I had run, you know, either 2:10 or 2:11 literally like 10 times.
Yeah.
And it kind of just became this thing. Like, I feel like, you know, probably most people that follow running are like, he should probably be able to break 2:10. It's just like, you know, I just like hadn't, and always came like, you know, very close. And I ran it in so many different ways, like had such different types of splits and ran it, and would somehow run, you know, courses with hills, times when it was hot, times when it was perfect, times where I went out super fast. Like, it always just ended up being the same time. So then when I finally broke 2:10, it was just kind of like this, it was just, I think people kind of found it just funny too. Like, it's just kind of like a thing. So it's like, I mean, big picture wise, you know, 2:10 is just this arbitrary number. I mean, like, we just kind of invented ways of observing time. And but so it's like, it's just completely arbitrary, you know? And that 14 seconds faster than I ran in the Olympic trials is like, is that even really a better performance? You know, but it still is fun. And it still is nice to be like, yeah, I ran like 2:09, even though big picture, it really doesn't mean anything. I probably wasn't even more fit than I was like in some of the other races, but yeah, I did it. So it still feels good.
So in 2021, when you ran Boston and placed 10th, then that was the race where you like led for much of the race. What was your strategy this year going into the race? And you placed 7th overall. Did you feel good about that?
yeah, that was my best finish at Boston. I wasn't in like, you know, phenomenal shape where I thought like, oh, I'm gonna shock the world today and run some crazy time that, but yeah, I mean, I wanted to be top 10 again because I was top 10 my first year and just placing top 10 in a major is always, you know, somewhat of a goal to shoot for. And then like kind of dream goal was like top five, but I didn't necessarily feel like I was in, you know, the best fitness for top five. I feel like to be top five at Boston, like you probably got to be, you know, you got to be, I probably just need to be a little bit better fitness wise. But so yeah, seventh was really good for me. And kind of where I thought I could be on like my best day, just like racing and making the most of my fitness. So, and you never really know like what the rest of the guys are going to do, but yeah, I was definitely pleased with it.
Watching the race on the cameras, they had the cameras on like this, the big pack of women. There's like 25 in the pack. And then they just had the cameras on like the one guy, you know, that went out and ran the whole thing on his own that won. So I didn't see like what was happening with the guys. So where were you? Did you run alone a lot? Did you run packed up? And did you just like pick people off towards the end? Tell us what that looked like.
Yeah. So basically right off the beginning, it went out pretty fast and there was maybe like 15 guys or so that were in the front pack. And then I looked around and there was another pack that was, had some pretty good guys that like, I knew who they were and they had run some fast times. So I was like, all right, this can be a good second pack. That front pack is going out faster than I want to go, or even can go. So I just tucked in with that second group. And we had, I don't know how many of us there were, maybe like five or so. It was a small group, but good group. And, one of them kind of left and like broke away and ran a little bit faster. But I felt like so he was going too fast for what I wanted to do. So I stayed with that pack until about mile 10. And then I could feel like they were starting to slow. And so like I kind of like took over the pace and then they eventually like dropped off me like that mile. So somewhere around like mile 10 or so, I became running by myself. And I came through halfway at 63:52, right around there, which was right around like where I wanted to run, you know, with Boston being like mostly downhill the first half. You're typically going to run the first half a little bit faster than the second half because the second half is just way harder. You have all the Newton Hills. You're tired from all the downhills from the first half. So it's just slower. So I wanted to be right around 64 minutes. So I was like, all right, I'm like perfect. And then I basically ran alone from there until the finish. And then I started passing people around mile 17, I think is when I passed my first person. And then I think maybe another one at Heartbreak Hill. And then I actually passed three or four, like just in the last like mile and a half or so.
Wow. How did that feel like in comparison to when in 2021 when you ran Boston?
Well, in some ways it was similar because in 2021 I was running by myself a lot.
That's true.
But yeah, I was out in front and kind of knew people were going to catch me. But actually in that race, the actual last couple miles ended up fairly similar because I got caught by the pack, but I was able to come back and run with most of that pack. And I think there was like 15 guys in the pack at the time because they had gone out really slow. So the whole pack was all together. And then, and a lot of them I battled with them, but was getting dropped by most of them. And then I ended up picking off a handful of people the last couple miles to like get back into 10th. So, in some ways it was actually fairly similar. And my splits were actually somewhat similar. I ran a lot faster second half this race, or, you know, this 2024 race, but yeah, it was a similar feeling as like in almost in every marathon I've ran, like I've caught in some people the last couple of miles just cause like people are like barely making it, you know, they're kind of shuffling or like, they're like on the side of the road with like hamstring cramps or something. So, even the races where I've been struggling at the end, you typically catch at least a couple people those last mile or two.
Yeah. What do you say to yourself when you're catching those people? Like, how do you will yourself to push that extra bit?
Not really much. Most of the time it's not like me like picking it up or like, you know, giving some crazy effort. It's more just like maintaining and like almost like just like staying within myself, because most of the people I'm catching are like, you know, by the time I'm catching them, they're running like 5:30, 5:40, some even like 6 minute pace, some even they're just stopped. So like I'm not like putting out this like superhuman effort. I'm just like staying steady and be like, I'm just like going to stay within myself till the finish and, you know, almost like keep it like a training run. Like, obviously I'm pretty much running all out at that point, but I'm trying to just like stay relaxed and just like, you know, keep running normal because everyone else is just kind of like in chaos.
Do you have a race where you've been in chaos like that?
No, I've never. Really? I've never like I've definitely gone slower. Like I've positive split for sure. I mean, last Boston in 2023, I went out in 62:20, which is far faster than I've ever ran a half marathon. Just in a half marathon, and so like I, you know, my second half was, you know, 68 minutes. So obviously that's a big positive split, but. Even then, like, my slowest mile was Heartbreak Hill, which was 5:40. But then, like, my last miles or whatever were, like, 5:15 or whatever, which is obviously slower than my average pace. But I'm not, like, blowing up and running, like, six minutes or something. Yeah. Yeah, or, like, walking. I mean, in Valencia, when I didn't finish, that was the only race. But that wasn't a blow up. That was stomach issues from mile one. And I basically, like, didn't run at all. But, yeah, so I don't know. I'm able to at least, like, I'll slow down for sure and, like, you know, not have a good finish. But it's never been, like, where, like, I have to, like, walk or something like that.
Like, massive blow up.
Yeah.
Okay, now that you've run Boston so many times, how many times have you run it?
This is my fourth.
Okay, four times. And obviously this time you ran it really smart and really well. PR'd on the course just a few months after the Olympic trials, which I want to talk about that a little, the trials a little bit, too. But what are your tips for mastering this course?
I don't think the course is like super crazy or different from, I think sometimes people like overthink Boston or like, you really just have to like be trained. So obviously like do like run a good amount, obviously like incorporate some hills, definitely like some downhills. I mean, like doing hill repeats is good, but I feel like if you're going to do a hill repeat where you're running up, then like also run down, like do some downhill strides. I didn't do like tons of training, specific training for it this year, but in the past, and even my whole life, I've done lots of like hard running downhill. So I've just like kind of built that up. So even though like this training block, I didn't have tons and tons of downhill repeats. It's like, I have like years and years of kind of toughening my legs. So, yeah, just training for it. Like, you don't have to do like anything crazy, but literally just, you know, like four or five downhill strides like once a week, like can help. And then, you know, kind of pushing the pace a little bit on some of the downhill portions within like a long run, doing like, you know, strength work. And like strength work for runners sometimes is, I don't know, you just grab some dumbbells or whatever, but like actually like lift like as heavy as possible. Like that type of strength work where it's like you're doing sets of three to five, like as heavy as you can possibly go. So yeah, but then when you're actually running the course, like if you've prepared, like if you're strong, you've done some hills. I think sprinting is also good. So like sometimes we won't ever sprint, but like I actually got some new Brooks spikes and they're really nice. So I was like, I gotta try these, but also I want to start working them in. So I'd had some calf cramping in previous races. So I'm like, I need to kind of just strengthen my calves, strengthen my lower legs and all that. So I started just doing some strides in spikes, then doing like some kind of like easy reps in spikes, not full workouts because I didn't feel that was necessary. And I didn't want to hurt my Achilles. That is a concern. So I'll just go get spikes and do a bunch of workouts and then you'll probably have an Achilles injury within like a week. But but slowly just kind of phased in some spikes and, you know, did some more stuff in them, did some sprinting in them. And my calves are like really sore. And even though like I have really strong calves and can, you know, do calf raises like over 400 pounds, it's like still just like a couple reps and some spikes and I was sore. So it's like so then with that training, I feel like my calves felt, they did cramp. They felt a little fatigued at the end, but then when you actually get to the race, like there's really not, I mean, there's like 800 feet of elevation gain in the whole marathon. It's really not like anything crazy. I think it just kind of gets in people's head or it has that reputation. But if you've trained for it, you don't have to like significantly alter how you're going to run. Just run an even effort, and you're going to be fine.
You had trained for the trials and we can talk about your chicken coop lights and everything. But obviously you had like trained for hot weather in February. It seemed like a lot of people really struggled with the sun and how hot it felt on Monday. Did you feel like it was hot?
No.
Yeah.
A couple things. Obviously, just living in hot places all my life, I think I'm just more naturally heat adapted, living in Fresno, living in Phoenix. And then, yeah, I did a lot of heat training for the Olympic trials, just with heat and humidity. And then I kept that up after the trials, not as intense and not as often, but I just kind of kept my setup. Mm. So then whenever I would run on the treadmill, it would be with my heat lamps.
Like, why not?
Yeah. And like, cause like once you're adapted to it, it doesn't feel bad. Like, it's just like, all right, it's just a normal run where I'm sweating a lot. So, I just kind of, but then there also wasn't like, I didn't feel like I had to. So it's just kind of like whenever I felt like it or whenever I happened to run on the treadmill, I put those on. And so I was able to maintain a lot of fitness, because once you get heat acclimation, you can maintain most of it. Just one or two sessions a week. At least according to some of the studies, you can maintain a lot of your adaptation. So I felt like I maintained most of it the Wednesday before the race, because I traveled on Thursday. So yeah, it was the Wednesday before the race. I had cranked up my settings like as much as I could. Like, I let it heat up before, so it was about as like hot as I could possibly get it, kind of what I did before the trials. And I ran like 6 miles or so at like the worst conditions I could get, and I felt really good. So I was like, okay, I'm probably almost just as heat adapted as I was at the trials. Like, it seems like I've actually maintained pretty well. So, and then I did a sauna session on Friday. There's a gym like a block or two from the hotel we stay at. So I just, I don't know, paid $20 for a day pass and used the sauna. And then I felt like if it was warm, I was going to be fine. And then I was. And then, so that was the training piece. And then during the race, I mean, they have water for you every mile. So I would just take 3 or 4 water cups every single mile, just wow. Dump them all over my body. And I mean, if you're running 5 minute miles, that means every 5 minutes I'm getting cool water
every,
all over my
every
body.
Every mile you did that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, I wasn't hot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a combination of training, but also, you know, I had cool water on me every
smart.
5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems like a big to do it at every single stop.
Yeah, I mean, well, they have at Boston, at least, they have the waters
yeah.
on both sides of the road. So, like,
yeah.
even if you're running the tangents, like, because I don't want to, like, cross the whole side of the road, but they had them on both sides. And so whatever side I was on based on the tangents, I would just, you know, get the water. And, it felt good.
Did you feel like other guys around you were doing that, or were you doing it more?
Well, I mean, I was by myself most of the race, so I don't know.
You don't know.
early on, I mean, I don't think – I was definitely taking it more than people. And you don't feel hot early on in the race. So,
yeah.
You know, they probably maybe weren't, but I knew it's kind of like one of those things, like you want to be doing it before you feel
uh-huh.
hot. So it's yeah. like, you know, like with your calories, like you're taking your gels before your glycogen depleted. Like, you don't wait until you're depleted to then start taking your gels. You take them right away. So even though like I was actually like, I wasn't hot, I was almost even chilly on the start line, like even mile two, I'm like, I'm going to start putting water on me. Even though I didn't really want to, cause I felt good. I'm like, I'm going to, before I get hot or before I even feel the slightest bit of warmth, I'm going to like try to stay chilly.
Proactive. So. Even though you seem to train somewhat untraditionally and like we had talked about run more marathons than most people, it seems like there's this like refreshing thing about the way you approach racing. Like, you don't overthink it. Like, you're doing all the things you need to do, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like you put so much pressure on yourself and you don't overthink it. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I typically think I'm gonna like run fairly well, or at least have like an average day at worst. Yeah, and I don't know, for whatever reason, like the marathon, it feels like it just doesn't bring a whole lot of like pressure to me or anxiousness. Like, I'm still like excited for the race, and like I have a little bit of like anxiousness, like I want to go, like I'm ready, like I want to race, and like I don't know how the race is going to go out, so like there's uncertainty, and I'm thinking through like, you know, how the guy's going to go out. If they go out at this pace, like, am I going to run by myself, am I going to find a path? Like, I don't know what's going to happen, so there's uncertainty, and that kind of has a little bit of anxiety. But for the most part, I feel comfortable with the marathon, and so I just I don't know. It's just like regardless of like how my training's gone or whatever, like I just feel like, you know, it's going to be a marathon and I'm going to run what I'm going to run. Yeah. They're just like fun for me too. So pretty much every marathon I've raced, like for the most part, it's pretty fun and enjoyable. Even though like sometimes it's like, you know, you're out there a long time and it kind of hurts sometimes, but it's, I like it. So, yeah. And even for the Olympic trials, like obviously that's a really big race, you know, high stakes, you want to make the Olympics, but, you know, it's like, what's like, if you don't make it, like I still wake up every morning in my bed and like nothing actually, like most things don't actually change your daily life, like a whole lot, even if you think that they're going to. And obviously like being an Olympian does change your life, but then at the same time as like, it kind of like you still just wake up and do all the same stuff. So I don't know. I just kind of run them.
Yeah. So the Olympic trials, you are like 10 seconds, you know, from that third place at the end of the race. And you were kind of like gaining on everybody for those last 3 miles. When did you realize like, oh shoot, it's like right there?
Yeah. Like the last mile. I mean, because for most of the race, you know, even at the mile 24 split, I think I was about a minute and a half back from third place.
Wow. At the time.
So like, and I didn't know that at the time, but I knew that I couldn't see third place. Mm-hmm. And like the last 3 miles, besides the last 600, you make a turn, but from basically like 3 miles to go to the last 600, it's just like a straight shot. So like you can typically see pretty far up the road. So the fact that I couldn't see anyone, like I was pretty far behind. Like, yeah. You know, I was over a quarter mile behind third. So yeah, like I didn't really think I had a shot. Like I knew I had been moving up and I moved into the top 10, which, you know, I had felt good about because I was out of the top 10 for a lot of it.
Wow.
And then I moved into like seventh, and then somehow I got into like sixth, and I was like, okay, like I'm probably going to be sixth. And then I saw guys up the road just basically like within that last mile.
Oh my gosh.
And actually, first I saw fifth place, and he was a ways up, but I'm like, I might be able to get him. And then, but I couldn't see fourth or third. And then once I got to about a mile to go, then I could see fourth and third. And they were still really far away. I mean, probably like at least 300 meters at that time. And like, there's only a mile left. So, and then as I turned the corner with 600, I was kind of just started like sprinting, and I was still a really long ways, to be honest. And then like I was catching them pretty fast, but then, and I'd passed one guy before that. Yeah. But then they like saw each other, cause then they got into a kick for third. So that kind of like, it's like they sped up like right at the end because like they started racing each other, like to make the team. But it was kind of like, dang, like if one of those guys wasn't there, like they didn't see each other, like maybe like if they would have just kept the pace they were running, like I maybe could have caught them.
Yeah.
But they had each other to race, which didn't help me. So, but yeah, it was a whirlwind because it was like I'd been running by myself for a long time, basically from mile 13 to the finish. You know, third place was so far ahead. And then all of a sudden, the last 5 minutes of the race, they were just like within sight again. And I was catching them rapidly. So it was just weird. And like, it was a shock to me, but I'm also still running. So it was just a lot.
Yeah. It's like, okay, could that race have been maybe 2 miles longer? That probably would have worked in your favor.
Yeah. Or like half mile longer.
Half mile. We don't need 2 whole miles. So how are you feeling now? You know, like fifth at the trials, seventh at Boston, both races, PR races. So you're making some big jumps. How are you feeling about what's next?
I mean, I don't feel any different than I felt before. Like I feel like I definitely still have like a lot more that I can do. And even in the Olympic trials and Boston, I don't feel like necessarily the training for either of those were super great. Like the training for the Olympic trials didn't necessarily go that smooth. And I didn't really feel that great during it and didn't have like some of the sessions that I wanted to. The training for Boston after the trials was minimal. I mean, it was enough to like race a marathon, but it wasn't anything great. It was just like I just executed well, like I raced well. So yeah, I mean, basically like everything that like I thought I could do, you know, from the years past are kind of, they're still the same. So I still feel like I'm the same person, can accomplish things. I mean, it is nice to like still perform well in those races, because it solidifies to me, well, I've always kind of believed I'm a good marathon racer. Maybe other people don't, because they hold on to like one or two races where, you know, I've gone out maybe, you know, fast. And I mean, even in those races, I finished basically right at my PR, but people don't see it as being a good race, even though realistically it probably isn't, it's decent. But I think like, just like, yeah, the consistency, like being fifth at the trial is like, okay, that's a pretty good performance. Being, you know, seventh at Boston and running on 210, like that's a pretty good performance. And like, I don't feel like I was in like spectacular fitness. Like, it's not like necessarily like the max of what I can do. But I think like it just like reaffirms that like, okay, like I can race, like I can race well and be consistent and kind of like be pretty close to maximizing my fitness pretty much every time I run a marathon. So if I am, you know, as I do kind of get better and do things a little bit better in training and just continue to like progress, like I'm gonna be able to have those kind of good marathon performances and maybe like breakthrough performances in the future.
All right, a quick break here to let you know that if you are not already sleeping with Lagoon pillows, you are missing out. These are the best pillows on the market, and we all know that recovery is the most important aspect to training, right? It is so important. If you're not sleeping on a pillow you love, go check them out. Go to lagoonsleep.com/Lindsey, L-A-N-D-S-E-Y, and get 15% off your order. That's lagoonsleep.com/Lindsey. All right, back to the show. When I first interviewed you for the very first time, I guess this is only our second interview, your wife was pregnant with your first. And I remember like just being really excited for, you know, what was about to happen in your life. And now you have two kids.
Yeah.
So how have things changed, and how are you managing like all the extra emotional pieces to life and physical demands that come with having kids?
Yeah, I think that sometimes people will have the like perception that like it, if they see people that are like having success or like performing high in one area, that they like, they can manage or handle everything better. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily feel like that's true. Cause I feel like for me, like, you know, like I'm like, like I have my work and then like I have like kids and then like, I'm running. And even though like I'm doing kind of like the end result of those things are like pretty good, it's still like, I feel like I still struggle in the moment. So most of the days where I'm just going through normal life, or like I'm really tired, or like I feel like I can't do things well. Or like it feels like I can't, like I just will feel like overwhelmed by like very simple tasks that are like logically, like they're not very hard to do. They're not very time consuming. They don't take a lot of mental energy. But it's just like, I can't do it. Like, I'm just like too, like it just overwhelmed. Like I'm done. And so like, that's how I feel like most of the time. And I feel like my training, I'm just kind of like getting through it and just trying to like be able to like have some sort of fitness to be able to run, you know, just trying to like make it align with something. Or just like trying to, you know, kind of get, most of the days it feels like, yeah, just trying to kind of like get through it in a sense. Or you're like, I can't do this for another year or for whatever. Like, it's just like, I'm going to stop. Yeah. Or like trying to, you know, when the kids are supposed to be going to bed and like, you're just super tired. It's just, it's hard. I don't know that like I have like some special way to like handle it, or that like I manage everything better. Like, I don't have like some time management program that I follow that I'm good
it's
at.
It's hard.
Like, yeah. It's just like, I just kind of struggle through it, and what, like, it's just whatever. But I think to have like some success in a lot of areas in life, like it doesn't really have to go smoothly. Like running's easy. Like, you, like an easy example, like you don't have to have like a perfect training block or like not all your workouts have to be good, or like it doesn't, you don't have to necessarily follow the preset schedule. You can have bad moments, you can have bad weeks. Obviously you can have bad workouts, but you can even have entire bad training blocks. And like, even though it's bad, it's like we're kind of just like labeling something, but like you're still doing something. So it may not, usually it's not even as bad as like we think it is. But like if you still have some level of consistency, like, and consistency can like look different. So it doesn't have to be like consistently like you follow the schedule. It's just like, just you did some sort of running, like you did something. Mm-hmm. And like it just kind of like takes the pressure off, at least for me, because I don't, like, things don't have to necessarily go well to like still have a good result. Like, you know, like if I don't have a coach, like I just basically make things up as I go. But if I had had a coach and he had mapped out, a training program for me, I don't think I would have done any of it. I would have maybe done like 5% of it, 5% of it would have gone to plan. And so we would have been like, okay, like, you know, we don't know how Boston's going to go. But when I was lining up on the race, like I knew I was going to run well, and I thought I could run what I ran, 209.50. I didn't necessarily know for sure if I was going to run that, but I knew I could, and I felt pretty confident that my race was at least going to be pretty close to that. A lot of things just don't matter. A lot of things don't have as much weight as maybe we give them in the moment.
Yeah. Do you, so like when you go into your weeks for training, do you kind of just have like a general idea of what you're going to do for the week then, and then play day by day by ear based on work and kids and life?
I mean, for Boston, honestly, I had like this buildup. It was just kind of like day by day. You know, if I felt good, sometimes like I'd do a harder workout, and then like sometimes I intended to do long runs, but they just didn't happen, or I don't know, something would happen and it wouldn't go well. I mean, I know like training really well, or at least like all like the principles of stuff. So like, I kind of like know how to get work in. Like I kind of know how to like get some sort of a stimulus to my body when it needs it, or like when, like even if I don't have like a structured workout, like I feel like there's times when like I can like do something that's like beneficial for me, that's like adding something, mm-hmm. even if it's kind of just like made up on the spot. Because it's just like, I guess the more you like know something, or like the more familiar you are with something, it doesn't have to be as planned, because like you don't necessarily have to like think about it for as long. Cause like when you're planning something, like you're really thinking through it, like, okay, I'm trying to like work this energy system, what workouts do that, how, what is the rest like, what, but I know it well. So like I can kind of do things on the, like every single 100% of my workouts are like made up on the spot.
Really?
During the actual workout. I haven't pre-planned a workout in a very long time. I mean, like, I might have an idea, like, I'm doing a long run, like, on a Sunday, like, almost every Sunday, or, like, when I'm working out on a, like, running, have the time to run, it's, like, going to be a long run, but the specifics aren't
of what you end up doing out on that run. Yeah. I kind of love that, though. What would a coach do with you?
Good
luck.
But for actual workouts, like intervals and something, I might have like a vague idea when I'm warming up, but mm-hmm. usually like, or I'll have an idea maybe before I start warming up. But then as I warm up, I'm like, I can just tell, like, I kind of know what I'm going to do well with. And then even within the workout, like I change it.
This is intuitive training. That's what this is called.
Yeah. And it may not be like a perfect way, but it fits for what I'm doing. And then there's no pressure, because like, there's no like, oh, I didn't do the, it's hard when I'm coaching to communicate, like, cause people frequently, not always, but a good amount of people will feel like, oh, this workout went good, or this workout went bad. And they kind of base that off the prescription of the workout. But it's like the prescription of the workout, even for the best coaches, it's always just a guess. Like you're just kind of like giving paces. Like you don't, because you don't necessarily know exactly what the person's feeling, what the weather condition is like. Like there's just always And your body varies from day to day. Your mental energy levels vary from day to day. So like the prescribed workout is, I mean, you should be fairly close to it. Like you should probably be within a range. And like sometimes you just know like, okay, I was like 30 seconds off of everything. So like, okay. If you were that far off, we'd probably just say like, let's just stop running and we're just going to turn this into an easy day because you're not ready to work out. But yeah. Most of the times, like people will be like, maybe they're like 5 seconds off on like the last rep or two, and like then they feel bad about the workout, and it's like these are just like it doesn't matter. So like for me, like since I never have a preset workout, it's like I never feel bad after a day because it's like I basically just I did whatever my body did that day, and it was what it was. And like I still have like, oh, like man, it felt really hard to run 4:55 pace today, and that's supposed to be my marathon pace, and like, you know, doing 800s at that pace felt rough, so that's kind of discouraging. Like I still had that, like I still analyze workouts sometime and like, man, yeah, that really sucked. You're like, oh, that kind of felt good, but then after that initial feeling, it's just like, okay, whatever, like I'm done with it. I don't like sit back and look at like, oh, like I nailed 5 workouts and I failed 6 workouts this block. It's like after I run it, I'm done with it. And there's no like success or failure of it because I'm just making the workout up on the spot anyways.
Wow.
I don't necessarily recommend that for a lot of people. But if you're good at it, though, like if you really know running and what your body does well with, then it can work.
Yeah, there's a lot of experience baked into that for sure.
Yeah. And I've had like, I mean, I went through all of, you know, up through college having really good coaches. So, I mean, from the time from like even junior high, I had really good coaches. So like, you know, for 10, 11 years, I had coaches with me every single day coaching me. So it's like, it's not like I just started running and just made up everything out of the spot. It's like, I've had like this vast experience, like running, training, and then getting insight from other people and studying things, and like, you know, so it's
working. That's it sounds like. So we'll wrap up here. So when it's the first time on the podcast, I always ask people, what's your message to leave with our audience? But today I'm going to ask you, now that you're a dad of 2, what do you want? Do you have girls? Do you have boys or girls?
Both. I have a boy and a girl.
Oh, you have a boy and a girl. Okay. What do you want your kids to know or think about their dad's running career?
I'd want them basically just like to be able to whatever they're gonna end up doing, and like from seeing me run, and I guess like relating that to what they're doing, is just to like invest in it and do it well, but also not like, I don't know, it's like this balance of like you want to take something seriously, but then also it's not that big of a deal. Or like, it's just like you can have like this somewhat laid back approach, but also like you're still putting in the necessary effort for it. But if it doesn't go well, like it's okay. Like it doesn't change who you are, like as a person, it doesn't really change anything. And then also like you can have lots of ups and downs, but the end can still be the same. So basically you can just do things like with like a lot of like freedom. Like there's no like pressure or like you have to do things a certain way. It's just like you can just like go and just like do it. Cause I feel like for me, running right now, after college, I stopped running, like kind of like joke, like I'm like retired from running because like I'm not competing anymore. And then a year later, I kind of like started training for a marathon just for fun, and like it went well, and I was like, oh, I'm good at marathons. And then eventually like signed a contract with Brooks and was professional, but like I've still kind of tried to keep the mindset that like I'm just kind of like, you know, retired from doing something serious, and I'm just kind of like doing something for fun, but still putting the time and energy into it, but also just, it's just kind of like, it's like this bonus, you know, it's like a bonus life where it's just like, yeah, you're just kind of doing it, it's fun. So then like, even when there's down moments, it doesn't really matter. So, but it gives me more freedom just to like, I don't know. I feel like people just like kind of thrive in that setting. I don't know how to explain it. I know what it feels like though.
I hear what you're saying. You're like, take it seriously, work really hard, but also like it's not like the only thing your life, it's not the only thing that matters in your life. Like, don't hold it so tightly. Is that kind of
yeah. where you're going? Yeah. Like there's a sense of like when you're almost like, okay, like not even like failing, but like you're okay just like not doing well. Like I could have like the worst race ever and like whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like it will be annoying. Like it will be frustrating and like I'd be annoyed because like I'm a competitor and like I hate not performing well and not racing well. And like it'll be annoying and frustrating, but then at the same time, it doesn't really matter. Like it doesn't really change much. Like it's just whatever. So then like there's no like heavy weight attached to anything. Like everything feels like super light. Like even the like frustrated feelings don't have a heaviness with them. It has an excitement with them because it's like I get to enjoy the feelings of like having human feelings of like passion, like of like wanting to do something, like having goals, and like when you don't achieve them it kind of stings a little bit, but those are still good emotions. Or they're still exciting emotions, I would say. But then there's also, you can have those same feelings where it's like, where you just feel down about yourself, like when you don't have those. And like, then those become, it's the same emotion, but it's really heavy. And so I feel like when you're in that sweet spot, like where you're like, your perspective of it is like kind of where it should be, even the like frustrating, disappointing, what we would typically call bad feelings are great. Like they're like, it just adds to the excitement, it adds to the passion. Like they're all good, passionate, exciting, giving life type feelings. Whereas those same kind of temporary feelings are really heavy when the overall perspective is out of balance. So it's like I still get frustrated, I still get mad, I still get disappointed, but at the same time, like that's all part of the love of it. Like that makes me love the whole thing. So that's what I would want them to have, my kids to have, in whatever they do.
I love that. How old are they?
2.5 and 7 months.
You're in it.
Yeah.
CJ Albertson, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks, CJ, for coming on the podcast. I'd love to connect with you all. I am LindsayHines626 on Instagram. You can send me an email, lindsay@sandyboyproductions.com. Learn about everything we talked about in the show notes at sandyboyproductions.com, as well as links to sponsor discounts and races I'll be at. All that information, just go to sandyboyproductions.com and click on the All Have Another tab. All right, friends, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week on All Have Another.